You're listening to an episode of NARCAD's Core Podcast Series. For more information on academic detailing, visit us at narcad.org and stick around after this episode. Hello to all of our podcast listeners. This is Bevan Chigori, NARCAD's Communications and Education Director, and I'm here today with our Resource Center Director, Mike Fisher. We're going to be talking a little bit today about the opioid crisis, something that is on many people's minds in the healthcare sector, and talking a bit about the ways in which frontline clinicians' behavior and choices can really help to improve outcomes for patients who are struggling with opioid use disorder and support them. So I want to open it up to Mike and just ask you a few questions, Mike, about how the opioid crisis really came to be, which is a pretty huge question to ask you. But specifically, how did frontline clinicians get into a space where they're now dealing with patients who have opioid use disorder at pretty high rates, where prescribing is high, and where both fatal and non-fatal overdoses are at an all-time high?
It's an important question that you're asking, Bevan, and you're right. It is kind of a huge question, and we'll probably, as we chat, cover multiple elements of it. But I'm going to start with one piece of it that I think really goes into why it was so easy for so many of us who are frontline clinicians. As you know, I still practice primary care about a third of my time, and so have been seeing this. Why it was so easy for us to fall into this pattern. Pain is incredibly common. All of us will have pain at some point in our lives. And in clinical medicine, you see patients with pain all the time. And we don't have great treatments for it. We still don't. And so 20 and 30 years ago, it was not uncommon for us to see patients with chronic pain, not be sure what to do about it. And that's a very frustrating position to be in as a clinician. You're doing this because you want to help people. And there's a real frustration when you say to someone, I understand that you have this problem. I understand you're suffering. We obviously always offer people compassion, but we can't necessarily do something about it. And so when the promotion of especially the long-acting opioids started in the, really picked up in the 1990s, which is the phase when I was doing my medical training, so I really learned this stuff in my formative part of my clinical years, the idea in the messages that were being conveyed, some by the companies that made long-acting opioids, and a lot of this was picked up by well-intentioned folks in the medical community who really wanted to help patients, that because of the way that long-acting opioids are formulated, they're not going to be as prone to the kind of problems with dependence leading to the behaviors that define addiction or opioid use disorders. As much, so you can safely say to a patient who's got pain, I'm going to give you a long-acting opioid. And if you still have pain, I'm going to double your dose. And if you still have pain, I'm going to double it again. And that's the kind of thing that we were being taught and we were adopting as a practice in many residency programs, medical schools, and practice sites across the country. And so it became the standard of care to try to keep escalating opioids, especially long-acting opioids, until patients didn't have any pain. Now, of course, that didn't often necessarily happen because patients would become tolerant of the opioids. There are certainly patients who they helped quite a bit with pain, but we had many patients who would still be limited in their function, but now they're taking a big dose of a long-acting opioid and we've given them another problem. But it's easy to see why that was appealing for clinicians. We want to help patients. And it felt very simple. And I remember I did this in my clinical practice, and it's an uncomfortable thing to say now with the benefit of 15 or 20 years of hindsight, that I would see patients with pain and say, here's your long-acting opioid, and I'll see you in 3 or 4 weeks. And if they were still in pain, we'd escalate the dose again. But it felt like we had that sense of mastery. Oh, I know what to do about pain now. I'm being a good doctor. I'm helping these patients. That's what a lot of clinicians want. I mean, we want to feel that we know that we're doing the right thing. And that's one of the pieces that's made this such a challenge, but such an important area for us as academic detailing educators and promoters, is the idea that clinicians want to do something to help their patients. And it's that impulse that got us into a lot of this problem. And I say this as someone who definitely adopted these behaviors. And so now we're trying to find practical ways to say to people on the front lines, here are things you can do to help your patients without creating all the problems that we now know came out of that approach.
These are all great points, Mike. And I think one thing that I'm curious about is you're talking about having that hindsight after 15 or 20 years, you know, looking back at your residency and your training and really being able to see that, you know, what you were taught and the things that you applied to frontline care have obviously, you know, been discovered to be not as they seemed. My question is, how do we successfully talk to frontline clinicians? This is for the academic detailers listening and for the people who are thinking about starting new programs and who are getting trained to go out and talk to these frontline clinicians. How do we talk to clinicians who maybe still are doing some of the things that they learned years ago or maybe haven't seen that or fully understood that the way that things were 20 years ago has shifted pretty radically? And the second part of that question is, if we're able to make folks see that things should be approached in a different way, and yet you're also saying that we don't have a ton of great tools, you know, and ways to deal with pain, how do we tell them, A, that we want to approach it differently, and B, find that different approach that's right for them?
It's a great question because there's not an easy answer. And I think that this is one of the places where academic detailing is so important as part of the solution, as we work with a lot of other groups that are trying to address the opioid crisis and the many different ways that it touches patients and touches clinical practice. I think we definitely have to be careful about oversimplifying because you raise really good points in that question. You know, we can't say opioid pain medicines are universally bad and they should be banned and no one should ever take them. They have a role. It's just that we really swung way too far towards using them too often and in too high doses over a number of years, like we talked about a few minutes ago. And the answer is not to swing the pendulum too far back the other way. But that does, you know, when you think about the frontline academic detailers we're talking to out there, it makes it a more challenging message because you're not coming in with a, here is an absolute, always do this, never do that, super simple kind of message. It's much more nuanced, and we have to admit, we don't have all the answers from the evidence right now. We're trying to use evidence-based approaches to the management of pain while avoiding creating opioid use problems for our patients, but we don't have a one-size-fits-all simple way to do it. We have to say, here's the evidence we have for now for what's the best approach we can offer our patients. We're not pretending it's perfect, and we're not pretending we have perfect evidence for every situation. And I think that kind of openness and honesty really can make a difference in communicating with those frontline clinicians who recognize that. We know that every patient's a little different, every situation's a little different. And so getting comfortable with, here's the best evidence we have, here's what is safest for our patients in terms of opioid use and avoiding opioid overuse, but being humble, coming with a real openness and humility that says, I as an academic detailer, I don't know everything. I'm not here to pretend to you, the frontline clinician, that I know everything. I'm here to bring you the best evidence that we have as of now. And we hope that the evidence keeps getting better. There have been some good studies that have come out the last few years about treatments for opioid use disorder, the evidence for when opioids are more or less helpful. I hope that those studies keep coming out. And if you're out there as an academic detailer, it would be exciting to be able to come back a year or two later and say, now we have some better evidence for this situation. But that humility leaves you the opening to come back and say, we had some evidence before, and now we have new evidence. And it's always a process of discovery.
What would you say are sort of the top sort of three things that seem to be what are on clinicians' minds in terms of challenges they face when they're thinking about their patients who are struggling with opioid use disorder, or in general when they're thinking about how to prescribe and prescribe well?
There's so much, I don't know if baggage is the right word, but complexity is a fair word around pain management and opioid use disorder. Some of the points I mentioned earlier about the fact that a lot of us who've been, you know, if you've been in practice for 20 years or more, you probably did a lot of heavy opioid prescribing in the days of trying to drive everyone's pain totally away with long-acting opioids, and it may be a little uncomfortable. And so you might, as an academic detailer, need to have a first conversation or even two to get everybody on the same page and aligned about what we're trying to do, because there are those challenges. I would say for the frontline clinicians, some of the biggest challenges they face, to get to the other part of your question, is first, what do you do for the patient who's actually having pain? Part of the reason that the message of give everybody long-acting opioids and keep ramping up the doses was so appealing is when a person comes in with pain, it was sort of a one-size-fits-all answer. Well, just give everyone a long-acting opioid. And whether it worked or not, you could feel like you were doing something. And the challenge now is that we're taking an approach, and I think this is the right approach given everything that we've seen about how the overuse of opioids causes problems and has created so many so much morbidity and unfortunately especially mortality, that having conversations focused more on how are you as a patient functioning, how is your pain affecting your ability to be with your family, to work, to go to school, to do all the things you want to do, as opposed to the more simple and less functional approach of is your pain score 1 or is it 5 or is it 7, and am I just going to give you higher doses of meds? But that's really challenging, and that takes a lot of time as well, and frontline clinicians are often time-pressed. So I think the how do you have those conversations about pain is one of the big challenges. And then I would say another one is how to manage the patients who are already on opioids, those patients who are getting, and I don't even mean necessarily patients who have an opioid use disorder, I mean patients who we as a medical system have given high doses of opioids for whatever painful condition they had at first, and who now have been taking those medications for years, sometimes decades. And now we're looking and saying, geez, that's pretty unsafe. We're really worried about you being on this high a dose of medicine every day that has a risk of overdose. What if you accidentally take something else that interacts with it? As you get older, maybe it affects you in a more significant way. What do we do with those patients? How do we help them get off the medicines or get to lower and safer doses? And a lot of frontline docs, I think, don't feel equipped to do that. So those are some of the challenges that I think are really significant for frontline docs and where they're looking for help. And that's part of what we've been working on so many of these initiatives around opioids, is how can we bring those practical tools to address those challenges?
Mike, you mentioned some of the initiatives that we've been working on at NARCAD, and I'm excited to share a little bit with our listeners about the projects we've been doing in partnership with the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, of course, and NACHO, the National Association of County and City Health Officials. Over the past year, we've had a really exciting pilot project that we've tried out where local public health departments who really have very high rates in their community of both fatal and non-fatal overdoses, as well as high prescribing rates, were selected. Those high burden communities were selected by the CDC. And then in partnership with the CDC and their really terrific set of materials that were developed around the 2016 opioid prescribing guidelines, in partnership with NACHO, who is really stellar at communicating with local and state level health officials, we were able to go to 4 pilot sites in high burden areas. So we started out in Bell County, Kentucky, a rural area, as well as another rural area, which is Boone County, West Virginia. We also visited Dayton and Montgomery County in Ohio, and Manchester, New Hampshire, which is part of Hillsborough County. And through these pilot site visits, we were really able to help to staff up small groups of public health detailers who came from a variety of different backgrounds. And that's something that we get questions about a lot here at NARCAD. Who can do this detailing and do it well? And the answer is quite a few different types of people who have healthcare backgrounds, who are able to understand the clinical content and be well-versed enough to have discussions with frontline clinicians about the different types of challenges that you've just been describing over the course of this podcast. And so we worked with folks from public health. Some were infectious disease specialists. Some were also pharmacists or pharmacy students, especially in West Virginia. We worked with the local school of pharmacy there at the University of Charleston, West Virginia. We were also able to work with folks who have spent their time in substance abuse treatment. You know, some counselors there, as well as folks who have worked in other similar clinical fields, such as HIV prevention. And so the great thing about academic detailing is it's such a flexible and adaptable approach. And really, it sounds to me like, and of course, we can't cover everything about the opioid crisis in 20 minutes, and we probably couldn't in 20 hours because it's such a complex topic. The idea is to just get those conversations started with clinicians and try to understand more as an academic detailer the context in which they're prescribing and treating their patients who have pain, and also to offer resources to reduce potential harm and have options that are safer for their patients. So for any folks listening who are starting up these types of programs, NARCAD is really excited to announce that we have quite a few new materials on our website that can really help you start thinking about how to put together a program that fits the capacity and scale that you're looking at with the resources that you have to go out there and have a team of well-trained educators start talking to clinicians and figure out what's happening in your local area, because every community really does have a different context, and that's based on the geography, the patient population, a lot of other elements. So the question I do want to close up with here, Mike, has two parts to it. The first is, you know, when you're looking at the opioid crisis, talking to clinicians about the ways that they care for their patients is just one factor, just one part of a larger pie. And so I wanted to ask you, you know, how does AD work in tandem with other types of interventions, you know, multifactorial interventions and pieces to address this community issue on different levels? And the other question I have is, when looking at AD, how do local communities really take these universal AD principles and work, you know, with places like us to adapt those for that local context?
Yeah, it is an important piece to think about. And I think I'll probably sort of answer those two questions together because they do really overlap. And I think that when we work with a lot of the state and local health departments that we've been working with and will continue to work with on the opioid crisis, one of the roles that we can serve as NARCAD is to help them understand what AD is and where it fits, and what elements of the approach to the opioid crisis need other approaches besides AD. So who are you trying to work with? What are you trying to change? Because that lets you really tailor and implement your academic detailing to have the maximum beneficial impact for the clinicians. So you mentioned the idea of multifactorial interventions. And I think that's a great framework for thinking about responses to the opioid crisis, because it's a complex issue. We talked a lot about how prescribers like me approach it and what we learned about treating pain 20 years ago that led us to maybe overprescribe. Well, that's one important part of it, giving people updated educational information that they can use to reflect and change their practice. But there are a lot of other elements of the response to the opioid crisis. There's what communities are doing with their first responder professionals to deal with the crisis, how they're working with insurers, both public and private, how technology might be part of the solution if it's used wisely, whether through some of the prescription drug monitoring programs or through electronic health records-based interventions and so on. Those that I just mentioned, those are different from academic detailing. But what you want to do when you're implementing an academic detailing intervention is think about and understand the environment that that frontline clinician is facing. If I'm going to go to a frontline clinician and try to get them to see how the evidence for good treatments for opioid use disorder is really compelling and think about making more referrals out of their practice, I need to know that other elements in the community, whether it's the payers, the insurers who would pay for those treatments, for opioid use disorder, or the referral centers that would receive them, that they know about it too, and that the multiple factors in the intervention all work together, then I can help design and implement a program of AD that'll help those frontline clinicians take that step, in this case, in this example, to get more treatment for opioid use disorder out there, whatever the key focuses might be. And so thinking about what else is going on in the community is really important. That's where the partnership that you talked about that we've had with the CDC and with NACHO has been so important, is being able to have organizations like that that span the national, the state, and the local level, and let us understand how a lot of interventions can fit together and how we can play a part in helping to implement the AD intervention. So that's where that multifactorial piece is really so important, and lets one then customize the messages, because you can understand what's the nature of the crisis in your area. In some areas, prescription opioids are still the biggest part of the problem, and that's where the focus needs to be, at least initially, for the messages to clinicians. And in other places, maybe the focus of the crisis has shifted, and there may be other types of opioids that are causing more morbidity and mortality in the community, and you need to focus on how do you help patients get treatment for those kind of opioid use disorders. So what we've learned through the collaborations with the health departments that you mentioned in Kentucky and West Virginia and New Hampshire and Ohio and the others that we'll be continuing to work with over the coming years, is that the professionals in the local health departments really understand their local environments. And so what we want to do is give them a set of tools, those principles of AD, a way to reach out to the frontline clinicians, give them information that they can use and that they can implement. That's what we bring. And then we let those professionals show us how those tools can be custom fitted to the opioid crisis as it manifests in their county or city or state. And that lets us be much more effective. That's what's been so exciting about these collaborations, is to have an opportunity to take these principles that we've been working on for quite a few years now and learn, as we have been, from all these dedicated folks in all these different settings around the country who've been attacking the opioid crisis, in some cases for many years, and now have one more really important tool, and that's AD, that they can use to address it. And so for us, it's been exciting to offer that and to continue to learn how we can make it more and more relevant to other health departments or healthcare organizations that may want to benefit from it. So as we wrap up, I think that's what we're thinking about looking into the future, is taking all of what we've learned in this initial pilot that you talked about and that summarized so beautifully in some of the interviews that you've posted on the NARCAD website and on the blog, to take what we've learned from that and move it to more and more health departments in more and more parts of the country over time.
Thanks so much, Mike. And as we are wrapping up today, for those of you listening who would like to learn more about the work that we do and the ways in which academic detailing can really help frontline clinicians to improve outcomes for their patients around the opioid crisis, and also the different ways that has been starting to be successful in some of the communities that we have been working with, you can always check out narcad.org/blog. You can also poke around on our learning center at narcad.org, which now features a customized opioid toolkit with plenty of different materials from across the nation and Canada that are used with frontline clinicians to find ways to do everything from talk to their patients about opioid use disorder, naloxone, ways to titrate, different ways to make sure that safer prescribing is happening from the start when folks come in initially with pain. And so all of those things can be explored at narcad.org. We're also excited to host folks at our upcoming annual conference series this November. And we have just recently announced dates for our next Boston-based spring training class that will be on May 20th and 21st, 2019. Sounds like a long way away, but it will be quickly approaching. And registration for that will be open as of February 1st. If anyone has questions about our training courses, any of our content or offerings, you can reach out to us at narcad@partners.org. Thanks for joining us for this episode of NARCAD's Core podcast series. We encourage you to join us for future podcasts. Visit us to see which episodes have aired at narcad.org. We also encourage you to visit our Learning Center, as well as our Best Practices blog and our conference and training series pages. If you have any questions about academic detailing, including a desire to reach out and partner with us, we're happy to help. Contact us at narcad@partners.org.